looking forward to this hour as I share something in common with our guest. Our reasons for doing so might be different, but we both, after the age of 40, decided to step outside of our comfort zones and start taking some risks and taking on some feats that scared us a little bit, from public speaking to skydiving. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. What about you? Have you conquered a fear? Or are you working up the nerve to do something you consider risky? Let us know, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guest. Patty Chang Anker is a writer, a yoga instructor, and author of Some Nerve, Lessons Learned While Becoming Brave. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. It's so good to be speaking with you.
It's great to have you with us. Before we talk about your project, how brave did you consider yourself to be?
Oh, zero brave.
How do you describe yourself before you did this?
I feel like I worked really hard, you know? Like, I tried really hard. I was someone who would just focus in on what I was good at, what I thought that I had, you know, something to offer to the world, and it just focus on that, because I didn't want to waste anyone's time with something that I would probably belly flop at. And that was most things. I think I was so concerned about, like, protecting myself and protecting my family from pain and humiliation that I was really risk averse, and I felt like brave people were other people, like they were cut from some other kind of cloth that I was not made out of.
And you were afraid of failure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm Chinese American. Are you kidding me?
So that's an attribute of Chinese Americans, afraid of failure?
I feel like I was not allowed to fail. It's like one of those areas where, like, you just don't even want to go there. Yeah. Like, you just can't even go there in your thoughts that you could fail. You know, it's like that and losing face for your family, or, like, embarrassing your family, were just unacceptable. And so it was just you were expected to succeed, and it was just the degree of success that you were going to have, you know. And I think that when your identity is so pinned to that, it's like it really makes it feel like every decision you make is critical, that you don't want to make a false step. And for me, I realized in midlife that that's a tough way to live, you know. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't exactly the way I wanted my kids to grow up either, to feel that any misstep was going to be doom.
Well, so what made you decide to step up and develop that bravery, or to get some nerve?
A number of things sort of came to a head at the same time. You mentioned in the introduction that that 40 was a trigger as well. I think that around that age, my kids were getting to be, you know, school age, where you really are pushing them out into the world. It's like you're asking them to try new things all the time. And they would come home and be like, oh, that was really tough. I never want to do it again. And the words coming out of my mouth were just like, oh, you know, don't worry. You have to learn from the experience. Just get up and try it again. You know, you can't quit after one time. And they would say, like, oh, but I look dumb, and what, you know, what if other people think I'm stupid? And I would say, you can't let what other people think stop you from trying. You know, you've got to keep. And I realized that I never applied these things to myself.
Mm-hmm.
That in my own life, I was really taking the safe route whenever possible. I would just take the out that, like, oh, I'm too old to do that. I'm too busy. I'm too tired. I have other priorities. I had a slew of excuses, really, for not stepping out of my own comfort zone. I think also 40 is a trigger because for a lot of us, like, we've been doing the same thing in terms of career and family for a long time at that point. And you start to feel like, well, would I want to make a change? And a lot of my friends were going back into the workforce, deciding whether to go back to school or to make a career shift. And I found that there were some people who really took to it very well. Like, they felt like, oh, this is a great opportunity for me to try something new in the next phase of my life. And for others, it was really difficult. I just felt like I and a number of my friends were feeling very insecure, that, like, you know, well, I've only ever done this kind of work. Who else is going to hire me? No one else is going to want me. I'm so rusty in what I do. You know, all I do is drive my kids around. There was this anxiety I felt, like, underlying a lot of us that was just like, what am I good at?
So what were you good at?
I was very good at worrying. You know, if I had died back then, like, my headstone would have said, "Mom, she worried a lot."
Well, no, give us an example of something that you were afraid to fail at, but you did it, and you thought, wow, I'm pretty good at that, too.
Well, you know, I feel like the thing that really liberated me was learning how to dive into the deep end of a swimming pool. A lot of people who are very physically agile are just like, what's the big deal with that? And for me, it was a very big deal because I grew up always feeling like, you know, physically I was not that coordinated. I'm kind of a klutz. I kind of do things instinctively that you're not supposed to do, like try to breathe while underwater.
Mm-hmm.
And being exposed up on a diving board in a swimsuit, especially as someone who's almost 40 years old, like, seemed like I was never going to get through that. Like, even that was going to be ridiculously hard for me. And I did it. I took two lessons. And by the end of the second lesson, I was diving off of the diving board. And that was something that I never could have imagined myself doing before. And I did it because my older daughter, they wanted her to try at camp, and she didn't want to try. So I said, look, if your mom can do this, you know, no one is going to look sillier than me. So so I went and did it, and suddenly it was like, oh, my gosh, if this was something that I did not think I had the physical capacity to do, I did not think I had the emotional strength to withstand, and I did it in under 60 minutes of practice time, then what else have I told myself that I can't do that I actually can?
Oh, wow. Congratulations. And, yeah. So
yes.
You even, didn't you go surfing in Lake Michigan in February?
Yes, that was a little crazy.
Yeah, that was.
You talk about stuff you don't want your mother to know. Like, yes, that, what ended up happening is from the diving experience, I got a little cocky and I was like, okay, I've always had this fear of deep moving water. And I almost drowned on a river when I was a teenager. And from that point, I hated the feeling of being swept off my feet and feeling out of my element and feeling like I couldn't control things. And so whenever I would go to the beach, I'd be nervous, and I felt like I was just sucking all the fun out of my kids. You know, it's like I would want my kids to enjoy themselves, and yet I didn't want them to get hurt. And so I'd be holding on to their wrist so tight that I would be hurting them. So I thought, okay, if I could really get at the sphere of the beach, then that would improve our quality of life for everybody. And so I went boogie boarding with a friend, and I ended up breaking my foot. Like, a wave came and knocked me down and broke my foot. And it basically confirmed all the fears I'd had in the first place. And then I was like, okay, you know, maybe I don't want to face these fears after all. You know, like, maybe your fears are there to protect you, and I should listen to them and not do this. And then I met a surfer. And basically, you know, the last person you want to meet when you're healing from a broken foot and trying to avoid the ocean. But he said, you know, I really think that learning to surf would be a tremendous challenge for you, and it would be a great way to face your fears because you'd really come up against everything that you most dread, you know, and if you can get through it, whatever happens, you're going to learn a lot from doing it. And he happened to be going to Lake Michigan in February, and he was like, I'm going in. You know, he said, I've never surfed on a lake. And surfing in the wintertime was like this really cool idea to him. And I thought, okay, I need to interview you just to understand what you have that I don't have. You know, I felt like mm-hmm. he was one of these brave people who was cut out of some other weird alien cloth that I did not understand. Mm-hmm. So I thought I would go and watch him. And one thing led to another, and I ended up in the lake.
And did you succeed?
You know, I stood up on that board, mm-hmm. and I am a suburban mom. You know, like, this is not what I do. This is not my element. It was my first time ever surfing, and the water was 36 degrees. It was insane. And if you had told me, you know, 2 days earlier that I was going to do it and I was going to be able to stand up on that board, I would have said you were completely crazy. And so you do something like that. I stood up on that board, you know, and all of a sudden it's like I could do anything.
Wonderful. And, you know, we have a listener who actually has tried to get me out on a surfboard on Lake Michigan around the Labor Day weekend. They have, like, you know, a big festival in Sheboygan of surfers on Lake Michigan. Who knew? I have it on the list. That's one of the fears that I've yet to tackle. It's not so much a fear of failure, but I've heard it's really hard. So congratulations.
It is hard. And that's the other thing. It's like, I feel like there are some fears that, keep us from doing things that are actually not that hard. And then once you get through it, you realize, okay, I really blew this fear out of proportion. You know, where else in my life do I need to just scale down the drama in my head, right? And then there are other fears that are protecting you from things that are legitimately difficult, that it's like you are going to need focus and determination. You're going to have to try over and over again. Like, you're not going to be able to give up easily. And to be able to do those things, I think, builds so much confidence in yourself. And that is where courage comes from. You know, so it's like being able to see yourself in the light of someone who does not give up. And even in the midst of such cold and feeling out of my element, that I could focus and, like, concentrate on pushing myself up and, like, physically be able to do more than I thought. There's nothing that you could do sitting on your couch that would make you feel that way. Mm-hmm. And that's when I realized it's like, okay, I had let my life become so limited, and because I was trying to protect myself from some pain. And then being out there on Lake Michigan, it was cold. It was painful. I got knocked around by the board. It was not comfortable at all. And yet it was exhilarating, and it showed me so much inner strength that I didn't know I'd had.
Let's take a call from John in Richland Center, who also, I guess, had a fear of deep water, John?
Yes. Yes, I was afraid of deep water because my father survived the worst Navy typhoon in Navy history. Mm-hmm. And so I was always afraid of deep water, but I built a tugboat, launched it, and recovered it 40 to 50 times, and it's so much fun to take that risk.
So when you would launch it, you just being on the tugboat, that was the risk?
Yeah, well, yeah. I was afraid it was going to sink.
Yeah, yeah. Well, good for you, John. So again, what is it that you feel, Patty, when you do accomplish something that you were afraid of trying?
Is John still on the line?
Are you there,
yes.
John? Yeah.
John, I was curious to know how you talked yourself through your anxiety the first time out, because I think that especially when a fear is based on something that really happened to someone that we cared about, it's
yes.
so easy to personalize that. It becomes part of your own story, you know? And so being able to tell yourself a different story that, like, that I don't need to be held hostage to that past, you know, experience?
Yeah, it's getting over the anxiety.
Yeah, and did you decide to do this on your own, or did you have...
Yes.
Oh, good for you. That's really amazing. Yeah, for me, I feel like the legacy of being the child of Chinese immigrants who had survived war, they had survived upheaval, dislocation, it made me feel like everything is very precarious and that things could change at any time. And that... impacts like how you choose to live and, you know, what kind of career to have and the things you hold on to in your life and how you approach your relationships. Like, it can color everything. And I think recognizing that what happened in the past to other people actually does not need to dictate how you live in the present and how what your future is going to be like is a very liberating thing.
Thank you so much, John, for the call. What about you? Have you conquered a fear? What is it that you're afraid of? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We are talking with Patty Chang Anker, who is the author of Some Nerve, Lessons Learned While Becoming Brave. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. We are talking with Patty Chang Anker this hour. She is the author of Some Nerve, Lessons Learned While Becoming Brave, talking about her experiences, overcoming her fears, be it diving into a pool or surfing, to public speaking, to riding a bicycle for the first time, talking about why she decided to step out of her comfort zone and start taking risks after the age of 40. And we're welcoming the risks that you are taking or want to take. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We have another caller, Christina in Glenwood City. Hi, Christina.
Hi there. Thank you. Well, on a dare, at the age of 50, I learned to downhill ski. I'd never skied before. And then a month later, friends took me to Vail, Colorado, where I skied the Black Diamond. It was absolutely thrilling. And downhill skiing is a wonderful way to pass our long Wisconsin winters.
Oh, my gosh, Christina.
Wow.
Holy cow.
Christina. Oh, I love it.
So you're going to be doing
that's crazy.
Yeah.
I would recommend it. Oh my gosh, it is. It's a wonderful, wonderful way to pass our winters, and it's such a wonderful feeling to have done this. Because I'll tell you, at first I just fell and screamed down the bunny hill. Vail's Black Diamonds a month later is just thrilling.
Well, you know, Christina, I really, gosh, I give you so much credit, and I'm proud of you, but you know, that's one of my fears is downhill skiing. When I was younger, I wanted to do it many times, but something always got in the way, and I thought, well, maybe this wasn't meant to be. And now I'm the older I get, the more I chicken out. I'm afraid of breaking a leg. You're not afraid of that, Christina? Oh, no, we lost her. Well,
I wanted to celebrate with her more. I hope she's still listening.
Yeah, I hope she is, too, but her phone dropped off. Patty, what do you have to say about Christina's bravery there?
Oh, my gosh. Mm. I mean, you know, talk about exceeding anyone's expectations, right? So not only is she exceeding her own expectations, she's exceeding anyone's expectations that over the age of 50 you'd be able to be skiing Black Diamonds at Vail. I mean, it's unbelievable. I recently had someone tell me that she ran her first marathon at the age of 50, which you think, wow, that's really amazing. She ran a marathon, period. And she's 50. Wow. And she qualified for the Boston Marathon.
Wow.
Like, she did it so well. You know, and it makes you think of, like, oh, my gosh, what are all the things that I could actually excel at that I've never even tried before? And I also think that Christina points out one wonderful benefit of trying something new and conquering your fear to do it, which is that it isn't this sort of grim thing that you have to get through in order to be a better person. You know, like, I feel like a lot of the how to face your fear message out there is this: there's something wrong with you, and so, you know, we need to fix it, and it's going to be painful, it's going to take a while. Actually, what Christina shows is that often the exhilaration that comes from it, and like this whole new world that it opened to her, that an entire season is now open to her in a way that it wasn't before, and that she's able to enjoy the outdoors and all of that is thrilling.
Mm-hmm. But some, like yours truly, might say, yeah, that would be thrilling, but I'm also, maybe I've got a good self-preservation gene that says, I don't want to break my leg, or I don't want to smash into a tree. What about that realistic risk?
I totally hear you with that. And for me, downhill skiing, I tried it in my 20s. And I had the experience of getting so tired out and just pushing myself up over and over again and being exhausted and then humiliated. I had to take the skis off and walk down the mountain. that was bad enough in my 20s, you know, like it's to do that older and our knees are creakier and, you know, we physically may not be as strong. I feel like for something like that, I would probably need to work on it before getting to the mountain.
But it's okay, to accept, well, you know what, that one didn't work.
Yeah, you know, it's like, to face your fear does not mean to be indiscriminate and to pick just anything and go out there and do it. For me, with the surfing, because I'd had the broken foot, proving that that can happen, right? Anytime you put yourself out there, stuff could happen. But I had gone through physical therapy, and then I had really been working out at the gym. Like, I felt like if I was going to go into the ocean, yes, it might still break my foot. The ocean is ultimately stronger. But I was going to be in as good a shape as I could be. And that, I think, is a great way to face your fear, is just to work on your own strength.
Not all of your fears involved some sort of dangerous physical activity, but many of them did. But you also wanted to overcome a fear of public speaking?
Yeah, you know, I feel like in general, when we talk about comfort zones and, like, staying in the things that we feel confident at, people broke down into different groups. You know, it's like there were people who had who felt very out of their element doing physical things, and that would be me. Then there were people who felt more out of their element with emotional things, with, like, social anxiety and connecting with other people. And then for others, it was like less a fear of physical pain and more a fear of rejection and of what other people thought of them. And I think that public speaking, like, really brings all that into relief. You know, it's like in our everyday lives, things happen all the time. You know, we trip walking down the street. We, you know, lose our train of thought when you're talking to a friend. But somehow, like, when it's in front of other people, it's so many times worse. And the mind just goes to this place where, oh, my gosh, everyone is judging me. And this is really going to impact my reputation. And, you know, it can be a very stressful thing. Personally, I've always felt nervous public speaking, but I do it anyway. And once I'm doing it, I enjoy it, because I feel like, you know, we all have this story that we want to tell. And when you start telling it and it engages other people, it's a very exciting thing. I sort of feel like that's what we're put on earth to do, you know, is to learn from each other's experiences. So I went to a Toastmasters club and was there for a period of months and watched all these people at different stages get up there and try to overcome their fear of public speaking. And the progress that can be made is huge. Like, this is just an area where you practice it, you do get better, period. And if you work on your nerves, you will enjoy it, period. You know, it's like, it's not something where you might feel limited by your own physical ability, you know, whether you're strong enough to do A, B, or C sport, that is irrelevant. It's like, it's just your ability to stand up there and say what you want to say. And everyone has that ability. So I feel very passionate about that one.
Let's take a call on this topic from Mark in Baraboo. Hi, Mark.
Hello. Thanks for letting me on. I've actually helped people get over their fear of public speaking. I'm one of the 5% of the population that doesn't identify it as my number one fear, so I kind of enjoy it. I do get a little nervous before I speak publicly, but what I tell people who have identified this as being their fear is that it doesn't matter how many people are in the audience. Everybody in the audience is listening as an individual, so you're really only speaking to one person. You could be in front of 10,000 people, but you're only speaking to one person because they're all listening as individuals. There's an episode of WKRP in Cincinnati where Dr. Johnny Fever gets blocked, and he just sits down on the air with Bailey, and she just says, "Now look right at me and just talk to me," and he gets over his fear. And that's really the truth. You know, an audience acts as a organism when they applaud in unison or laugh in unison, but they're really listening as an individual.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. That's an old radio trick. That is what you're taught to be a radio host or a radio announcer. You are taught to speak to just one person. So
that's a really great point. And I love that Mark helps other people through their fears. And I feel like that's something that when you're struggling and you feel like, oh, can I do it? Am I going to be able to make progress? I don't want to try if I'm going to fail. I think that we sometimes forget that there's help out there, that it's not just a matter of now you just need to stand up and go and gut it out, you know, that there are people who are very willing to give feedback and to be supportive, and there are groups to try like Toastmasters. And I think that if we see our own strengths in different areas and think, gosh, how could I help someone else? That's a very empowering thing, too. So you can see yourself as a teacher and as a student in all sorts of different areas of your life. And then all of a sudden it becomes, like, not embarrassing to feel like I don't know how to do that very well, or I'm scared to do that. If you ask Mark, I'm sure there are areas that he feels more nervous about, you know, where he's gotten help from other people. Mm-hmm. So, I think that what is hard is when we sit alone with it for a long time, and then we just feel like it's too late for me. You know, I'm never going to be able to do that. Go out and find people like Mark in your life.
Thank you, Mark. And you can join us, too. Don't be afraid to call in to talk about overcoming fears. We are talking with Patty Chang, anchor. She's the author of Some Nerve, Lessons Learned While Becoming Brave. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And Patty, some of the things that you write about in the book aren't necessarily, physical things. You've got a chapter in your book on clutter. And you had quite a bit of it. So do I. Why did that require bravery to declutter?
You know, actually, clutter it was one of the first fears that I faced, and I never thought of it as a fear. I thought that it was laziness, mm-hmm. and a sign of, like, my, you know, higher order creativity and my, you know, priorities as a parent that I was out there connecting with my kids rather than cleaning things up. And I was so creative, and so I held on to everything because, oh, I could make puppets out of this, or everything could be used for something else. And it got to a point where everyone I knew was asking if I had seen the show Hoarders.
Oh, no.
I wasn't actually hoarding, but things were really a mess. And when I'd called this wonderful organizer, her name is Mary Carla Magno, and she was the third organizer that I had tried to work with, you know, in recent years. And I was like, well, it's not, I don't know that this is going to work, but I need to try. This was another thing where it's like you're trying to have your kids be organized about their stuff, and meanwhile they're like, Mom, why is everything that we all own on the floor? And she came in, and the very first thing she asked me to do was to get rid of this box of files from this, like, peak time in my career that had happened 10 years ago. Uh-huh. Like, I had worked at the New York Times. I had all sorts of things that I was proud of in this box. And she was like, okay, let's get rid of it. And I was completely devastated by that. I was like, why? What did you, you know? And she said, this box is holding you back. You know, it's like it's literally taking up space on your floor, and it's also taking up mind space. It's like your mind is in this box. You're not thinking about the next step in your life. So she made me get rid of it, and that to me felt like confronting a huge fear. It was this huge fear of letting go of my accomplishments, of, like, not knowing, you know, what was going to come in the future. So my fear of the unknown, and then also I was confronted with all the stuff that I was holding on to, and realizing that as the child of immigrants who came to America with nothing, I felt this need to hold on to everything because I actually have the luxury of, you know, being able to stay in one place if I want to, and I can hold on to these things. So I was doing a lot of emotional holding, and realizing that, like, their life isn't my life, and that if I make room for other things in my life, then that might actually be better for my kids and be better for our future. And so it was a major, major step in my life. And I feel like letting go of that hard stuff, you know, confronted a lot of emotional fears. It freed me up in a way to try new things. And it kind of set me down this path of facing fear. So it's actually one of the first chapters in the book. I feel like if you start with that, then you're really well on your way.
Wow, that's I can understand that, and I can I know how you feel too, because I've got a lot of that stuff in boxes in the basement, and it's maybe time to get rid of that too. You know, wait till you have all your kids' artwork and report cards and all that kind of stuff. But
I know. Yeah. I mean, I feel like I was doing it. It was one thing when I would do it for myself, but then when you're doing it for everyone in your family, it just becomes exponential, you know? And it's like my husband is he's very good about just being able to appreciate something in the moment and then pass it on, let it go. He doesn't need to hold on to old Christmas cards. He doesn't, you know, for me, I felt like, oh, but this reminds me of the time when, you know, those sentimental attachments to things, which I don't think are a bad thing unless mm-hmm. it really, like, holds you back. And it was. In my case, it definitely was.
All right, back to the phones. Pam in Viroqua. Hi, Pam.
Hi, Joy and guest. Oh, here I am facing yet another fear. Calling you in.
Congratulations.
Yes, woo. Hello. Yes. Well, I've always had a fear of roller coasters ever since I went down to Florida with some girlfriends that snuck me onto Space Mountain, me unknowing that that was a roller coaster in the dark.
Oh, no.
Naughty.
Right. So just this summer, my dental hygienist was talking about roller coasters and how much she loved them. And so my husband and I took a weekend and we went to Wisconsin Dells and did roller coasters.
And how'd you like that?
Not as much as I'd hoped I would. Did a lot of screaming. It was very exciting. That's true.
Did you go on that Hades one at Mount Olympus?
Yes.
That one gave me a headache, Pam. I just
goodness. Yes, it was a thrilling day. The one that really freaked me out the most was one inside where the arcade was, mm-hmm. and you go whipping off to the end and feel like you were going to fly off into the crowd. Oh my gosh! So it was a wild day.
Well, so but do you feel good that you overcame the fear to do that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, good for you. I feel like, you know, some people's idea of a good time is just not my idea of a good time. And that's okay. We're not going to like everything that we try, but just to have tried it is really great. And this last summer, we went to the Ulster County Fair, and as soon as we walked in the gate, like after like this long drive to get there and this like dusty hike across the parking lot, like the very first ride we saw, the kids were like, I want to go on. And so you're not going to say no, right? And they needed an adult. So my sister and my brother-in-law and I went to supervise this group of kids of ours. And it was a nightmare. It was just like we hadn't seen it in action, so we didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
It was spinning, high, low, turning. Like, it did absolutely everything. And when we got off of it, we just felt destroyed. You know, like, I felt like I couldn't walk straight for the rest of the day. But the kids were glad that we did it with them. So sometimes things are worth it.
Way to go, Pam. And thank you for calling in. That is a big fear of some people. It's the same as the fear of public speaking, Patty, that calling in on a radio show.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank
you.
Yes. No, good for you. And believe me, as a radio show guest, we want the call. So you make me so happy. Thank you for doing it.
Thank you, Pam. And we have many more calls to get to as we talk with Patty Chang Anker. She is a writer, a yoga instructor. She is the author of Some Nerve, Lessons Learned While Becoming Brave, talking about what she learned when she decided to face her fears, number of different physical activities, skydiving, riding a bike, deep water and surfing, and some other fears too, like clutter and public speaking. What about you? What are some of your fears, and are you planning on trying to overcome them? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We are finding out what we can learn from facing our fears. Talking with Patty Chang Anker, who faced many of her fears, and she wrote about it in Some Nerve, Lessons learned while becoming brave. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I had mentioned when we first started, Patty, that you and I do share something in common in that we both started doing this after the age of 40, starting to face fears and step outside of our comfort zone and take some risks. And I think it was actually my parents passing away when I was in my mid-40s that really hit home. It was sort of a life doesn't last forever. Life is too short. I need to do these things that I've been wanting to do or that I've been afraid to do. Mm. And maybe you can talk a little bit about how do we overcome a fear of death?
You know, originally I wasn't planning to write a chapter on death. I felt like it was just too big. I was like, you know, entire books, philosophies, religions have been based on, you know, that topic, and how was I going to tackle it in a book with many different chapters. And my editor really pushed me. She said, you know, it is at the core of so many of our fears is the fear of death. And so she encouraged me to explore it. I ended up interviewing a priest, a rabbi, and a swami, and I found three people who had near-death experiences, and through a number of these stories and different philosophies, I came to a couple of different epiphanies, I think, on the subject, which is that most people, when they actually come up to death's door, I had one woman who had a heart attack at the age of 40 and then severe health complications after that for years. And so she went up to death's door many times. And then I had a friend who, when he was 13, his family was lost at sea. They went out on this little fishing boat and ran out of gas, and they were actually lost at sea for 3 days and three nights. And he was at the point where he was hallucinating on the boat. And then I had a friend who was on a flight that plummeted midair, 20 stories in 2 seconds. And everyone on that flight thought that they were going to die. And what people feel when they come up to that moment is very often this, like, it isn't this fear of death anymore, you know. There is a sense of peace with the idea that it could all be over. And then when they get sent back to life, all of a sudden there's this renewed feeling that life is extremely precious, mm-hmm. you know, that the time that we have here and the strength with which we have to do something, you know, we should be living, we should be like fully experiencing things as they're happening to us. I think that for the spiritual people, leaders who I spoke to, who counsel a lot of their followers or their parishioners through this fear, there's a big sense that, like, okay, this is the ultimate unknown. We don't know what it feels like to die. You know, we just don't know. Might it involve pain and suffering? Maybe, right? But fearing it or worrying about it isn't going to stop that from happening. You know, and that in general in our life, we're human. We're built to have pain and suffering. That's just part of being here. And the more important thing is how we live this life, you know, is the choices that we make, the relationships that we make, how we choose to spend our time. And to be able to, regardless of pain and suffering and death that is coming, to really fully engage with an open heart. Like, that is the measure, you know, of a life well lived. So I'm actually really glad that I ended up exploring this topic, because it opened up so many honest discussions with people. And I think that when people have lost their parents, when they've lost spouses or children, like people very close to them, it's a terribly lonely experience. And like, and for people who have been to that place themselves, and to come back, all of them talked about how disorienting it felt to be sent back to life, you know, that it felt like no one else understood what they had been through. And I think that when we open up these conversations and talk to the people we love about, you know, what do you think happens, you know, how does it impact your life, you engage with people in a really, in a very real way. And I feel like your experience of losing your parents and then being able to open up your life afterward is so good. It's such a sign of the positive.
Yeah. And so I dealt with that by jumping out of an airplane.
Okay, so Joy, you mentioned in the intro skydiving. I have not skydived. I have not. So I want to hear about your experience.
Well, you know what? I thought I was going to die, but I was. It was a mix. It really was a mix. Once it was over, I was exhilarated. But actually, during, I had a few issues where my goggles were coming off my head, and I didn't feel like I could breathe because I didn't scream when I jumped out of the plane. I was told I should scream so I would make sure I'd be breathing. So I was hyperventilating. I was hyperventilating. And so I thought, oh my God, I talked myself down, so to speak, and said, I'm not going to die. I'm not going to die. I'm not going to, you know, I'm breathing. I'm getting oxygen. And everything was fine. Once the chute, it was the free fall that was scary. And once the chute opened and we were floating, then all was well. And it was beautiful. And I felt really proud that I was able to do it. But you know what? I'm not going to do it again.
You know, life is short, and so you don't need to waste it doing, like, repeating things that you've done, too. You know, yeah, that's okay.
Let's go to Sophia in Madison. Hi, Sophia.
Hi. I had a question regarding trying not to be afraid of new things. Like, for example, when I was little, I was never afraid of the dark. And the older I got, the more terrified I got of it. So I was wondering what your guest thoughts were on that.
Developing fears later in life, Patty.
Yeah, I think that's very common, that as we get older, we'd grow out of some fears and grow into other ones. I think that some of it has to do with our physical changes. You know, it's many people develop a fear of heights when they're older, and some of it just has to do with, you know, the stuff that organizes our balance in our body gets older, so things just become a little bit harder. Other times I feel like when you feel that there's more to lose, all of a sudden the nightmare scenarios that you've had maybe just for yourself before, now you're worried about your kids, you're worried about something happening to your home, you're worried about losing your job, and like that can color all sorts of things in your life. I think that the longer we've lived and if we've had traumatic things happen to us, that can also set off things that we never thought about before. So if you've ever had a scary experience in the dark and then all of a sudden every time you're in it, the feelings come back. I think that the dark is a tough one, you know, because in some situations you really don't know what's going on in the dark. Every little rustle can make those, you know, very primitive flight or fight reactions come up. I think that being able to talk yourself through it, especially in situations where you basically are safe. You know, it's like if you're in your own house, if you're in places where it's a short distance to get to a place that you know, just being able to tell yourself that it's the same as the light, only dark, right?
Mm-hmm.
The way you would talk to a child that you love. I think it's important to talk to yourself in a kind way and to understand that your fear is trying to help you. And that it's not that there's something defective with you and that, you know, I think we sometimes make things worse by then berating ourselves and saying, why am I like this? I shouldn't be like this. Other people aren't like this. Everyone has fear. And especially those primitive fears. It's like those ones, they may just come up a lot. And being able to say, okay, thank you for being here. You want me to be alert to something? Let me be alert to it if I need to. And if I don't, I'm going to have you quiet down because I need to get to where I'm going.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sophia. Jeanette in La Crosse is with us now. Hi, Jeanette. You're on the air.
Hi. I have an unusual question. What do you do? How do you advise people who are trying to make a moral type of decision? For example, they're in a comfortable marriage and everything's smooth and going along, but then they have an opportunity to like say be with a long lost love or do something that might take them out of that marriage, and they can't decide what is what is right. How do you advise someone in that situation?
Uh-oh.
Oh, that's... Is my husband listening to this? I think that comfortable marriages, in some ways, it's good to shake them up a little bit, but in terms of keeping your life exciting for yourself. And I think that if you are learning new things and if you're engaged and changing, and I've had people ask me, you know, well, what if your spouse isn't happy about that? Like, what if they like things the way they are and they don't like that you're out there doing these new things that sort of threaten their idea of you? And one thing I say is that that might happen. You know, it's like your equilibrium gets jostled around a bit when you try to open things up. But they may end up coming along, you know, and so the relationship that was like very comfortable and sort of in its routine and not that, perhaps not as stimulating as it used to be, that can change. It's like you can end up like really getting each other to this place of feeling excited about things again and of looking forward to things again. So I think I would probably encourage that. As opposed to the old flame, just because that I don't know enough about that situation to comment.
Yeah. Jeanette, thank you for the call. I mean, it's something that I'm sure is on the minds of some. Let me ask you, Patty, as your yoga instructor, here's one. I want to do a handstand in yoga. I practice yoga, but I'm afraid. Why is it important for me to face that fear and try to do a handstand?
Oh, I so feel for you because that was one of my main fears. And I started, my blog is called Facing 40 Upside Down, and it was exactly for that reason. It's that I felt ridiculous. I'm a yoga teacher, and I couldn't do a handstand. And I knew that I was physically strong enough to do it, and so it must be a mental or an emotional thing. It's just that every time that I'm upside down, it just felt like my brain would scramble, and like I would feel, oh, I'm going to fall. And it was just that fear that I'm going to fall would make me fall. And I didn't want to hurt my wrist. I didn't want to hit my head. I didn't, you know. I ended up taking, it took a year of practice for me to be able to balance in a handstand. I did lots of group classes where I asked the teacher for extra help, and, you know, I had spotting, I had people holding my legs, and I was like, oh, does this count if someone's really holding me up, you know? And then I did a couple of private lessons with someone who helped me fall. Like, she just, like, put padding down, and she was like, okay, we're going to work on falling. And so, like, the tuck and roll, and she had me work on balance. You know, a lot of, like, standing on one leg for 4 minutes, which is hard. But then you get into the zone of, like, your body just learns to balance. So at the end of that, I was able to do it.
Yeah, we just have a minute, and I wanted to, you know, just maybe it's a generic example for everybody. You know, why is it important to face a fear like that?
I think it's such a great thing when you work at something and, like, you come up against it, you know, over and over again, and you sort of get used to the feeling, and you tell yourself, okay, I'm a little uncomfortable now. I'm going to keep going. And you get to see what's on the other side. I think that's so much better than not trying and just counting yourself out and saying that, you know, I'll never be able to do it. I think we always want to be in a state of thinking that maybe we can.
You talked me into it.
Yay!
So what's next on your list?
I'm in a constant state of, like, fear of obsolescence and technology, right? I mean, I have not updated my phone.
Okay. All right. So smartphone for you.
I know. Life keeps bringing challenges and different fears to the forefront. With this book, I'm out there talking a lot more than I ever have before, and that's nerve-wracking and exciting and thrilling. And I'm so glad that I got the opportunity to be here with you.
Well, it was thrilling for us, too. Thank you so much for being with us.
Okay, thank you.
Patty Chang Anker is the author of Some Nerve, Lessons Learned While Becoming Brave. Thanks to Cynthia Schuster and to Bill Martins and to Robin Cherry and to Christy Taylor, who produced this program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.